Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Women rudders? No big deal, right? But how about a woman rudder who also is, say, the mother of three, including preschool twins? One of our guests today fits that description. And she says that when people learn that she's a mother, on top of being a runner, they look at me like I'm a supernatural being. Why is that? We'll find out today as we talk to the authors of Run Like a Mother, How to Get Moving and Not Lose Your Family, Job, or Sanity. Later on this hour, how important is a downtown convention hotel to the folks who lure conventions to Kansas City? They'll tell us. But first up, the authors of Run Like a Mother, who both just happen to be runners and mothers, and who both just happen to have a new book out, Train Like a Mother. Dimity McDowell writes about sports and fitness for a range of magazines. She lives in Denver with her husband and two kids, but she's here with me this morning. Dimity, good morning.
Good morning.
Nice day. Welcome to Kansas City.
Thanks.
Sarah Bowen Shea is a freelance writer specializing in fitness and parenting. She lives in Portland with her husband and three kids. And Sarah, nice to have you too.
Thanks. Nice
to
be here, Steve.
Welcome to Kansas City. Well, Sarah, you're the one who wrote that people look at you bug-eyed when you tell them that you're a runner who happens to be a mother. Why do people do that?
They know how busy mothers often are, and to add running into the mix they just think it just tips the scales into the crazy category. And so many times mothers come up to me and they say, how do you find the time to go running? And it's just like, I don't find the time, I make the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it often means setting the alarm clock earlier than I'd like. I got up at 4:45 yesterday to do 7 miles before I flew here. And so it just, you know. It's what I love to do, so
well,
I make time for it.
Sometimes folks think you have no business being a runner because, hey, you have too much responsibility around the house, too.
Oh, exactly. They think that too often mother runners don't put themselves first and that there's just always something else to be doing for the family. There's always something on a mother runner's to-do list. And so what our books talk about is to put yourself first. And by putting yourself first, you can be a better mother, a better wife, a better friend, a better, you know, volunteer, whatever it is.
I was interested. You say that that you became even more athletic after having kids. What got into you?
Well, one, I like to get out of the house. So then I get to have some silence to myself. And also just I equated it with when I was a rower in college, that when during the season, when I had more to do, I could fit more in, whereas I lollygag if I don't have all that much to do. So you just got to get the ducks in order, get that run in, get the sanity back on, and I'm good to go.
Dimity, when you wrote this book, Run Like a Mother, you said you thought a revolution was going on in this country. What kind of revolution?
Well, the first running boom was kind of in the 1970s, the Steve Prefontaine era. The connotation of being a runner then was, you know, I've got really cut calves and I'm wearing split shorts and I'm running around the oval track as fast as I can.
That's me.
You look like that,
yeah.
Actually. The second revolution is what we call the second running boom, is wearing a running skirt, I say, which is a little bit of a exaggeration. But women now make up more than half the race participants in every distance minus the marathon. And it's women, that women bring a different characteristics to running and running races. I mean, we're in it, of course, for the time on the clock, but we're also in it for so many other reasons. I mean, as Sarah alluded to, it brings back our sanity. I often say that I run for emotional and spiritual reasons. It's that endorphin rush that kind of gets my day going on the right foot and just makes me feel good about myself and the world. So when this revolution, it's not just about being fast and winning. It's about, like Sarah said, taking care of yourself and putting yourself in a good place.
You put this so well in the book. You wrote this, Dimity: for an overstressed, overtired, overextended mother, there are a few other sensations that rival a delicious run. Running for you, is that good?
A characteristic of running that is so different than anything else in my life is that it's black and white. You start it, I want to run 5 miles. 5 miles later and 45 minutes later, I'm done. And I can cross it off. You know, with a mom, there's always another dinner to make. There's always another diaper to change. There's always more homework to help with. Like, you're never, ever done, you know? And sometimes I think, like, oh, when my kids get to 18, I'll be done. And I'm like, wait, I'm almost 40. And I call my mom every day still. So parenting is just kind of this endless cycle of just tasks and tasks and giving and giving. And so running is so delicious because it is so black and white. You either do it or you don't, and you get the sense of accomplishment when you do.
Sarah, is that good for you too?
Oh, it is. And I think I actually enjoy that physical act of running maybe a little better than Dimity. I think sometimes Dimity likes having run.
I'm that way. It's more fun for me when it's over than the actual act of doing it. Yeah.
Right. No, I mean, I love being out there. I love being outdoors. And so that it's my excuse for getting outside every day. I live in Portland, Oregon. Oregon, so I can be outside every day and run. And I just adore being out there. I adore the impression that people get when they see me out there. I mean, I definitely get a little ego boost from doing it.
How old are your kids now, Sarah?
I have a daughter who's 10. She's in fourth grade. And my boy-girl twins are now 6 and a half. They're first graders.
So you're still loaded.
I am. There's a lot of homework. There's a lot of lunches to be made. There's still a lot of tears and bickering. I don't know. I think we can hear the bickering from here.
Sounds like my house. Dimity, how about you?
My kids are, I just have two, 5 and 8. So I crossed a big line when I got to the full day kindergarten this year. Yeah. You know, so now I've got the house to myself, you know, for 5 days a week.
Yeah. Hey, how did you two meet? How do you know each other?
So we both went to Colgate University, which is in upstate New York. Sarah's a little bit older than I am, so we weren't in the same class, but we were both on the rowing team. So she ended up coming to the 20th anniversary of Women's Crew in Rowing when I was the captain, introduced herself, and then we both are writers, sports and fitness writers, so our paths just crossed again and again. So we've never lived in the same city, but to fast forward a little bit, to run like a mother, I was pregnant with my second kid, and I knew that I needed a goal, like I talked about earlier, just having something for myself. And I'm like, who could I like rope into a marathon? Who would definitely not say no to doing this with me?
And that's how Sarah, your book opens up, because you open up with those emails going back and
exactly,
forth.
Exactly, right? Exactly. Yeah. And Sarah was the person that I knew that wouldn't back down from a challenge like that. So so that's kind of what brought us together and brought us to this level of friendship.
You know, Sarah, it's just a great title for a pair of books, Run Like a Mother, Train Like a Mother. Where do those come from? Your idea, or did Anders McNeil pitch them to you?
It was Dimity's idea. She came up with it. And I like it because there's the implicit joke, particularly in the phrase run like a mother. There's a word that, you know, NPR will not allow to be said.
Thank you, by the way. But
the nice thing is that my 85-year-old mother doesn't get that joke. She just thinks it's cute. And my kids, they don't know, you know.
And there's also like a nice attitude to it, like the way that you say it, like run like a mother or running like a mother. Like there's this determination and attitude that doesn't come from like another book about women's running, you know. Yeah. And what we kind of set out to write a book that was different than any other running book. We really wanted a book that got to the emotional and spiritual side of running, and not so much like go do these workouts and run this fast and run this hard. And many running books can be so clinical. So we wanted a title that would separate us from the get-go from other books.
And tell us how your book is different, because there's so much sort of chit-chat in the book between the two of you talking about how you approach running, how you approach training, everything else.
Well, yeah. So in Run Like a Mother, we have 26 chapters with a .2 in between, which is kind of like what we call a commercial break. So that's kind of a
26.2 for
which
the marathon.
Is the mother load of all races, right?
Yeah.
And then Train Like a Mother has 13.1, which is a half marathon. And again, it has a .1 in between each one. And like I said earlier, we really just wanted it to be conversational, very kind of girlfriendy, casual. Because the thing about it is we're not telling people how to run. I mean, we have a lot of tips and a lot of advice from ourselves and this community of mother runners that we have. But we wanted to kind of come at them like a girlfriend in the locker room and not like you must do this or, you know, and we're in the trenches with them. So, hey, this works for me. This is how I keep my kids entertained in the stroller. I give them a DVD and M&Ms, you know. And so it's not like Dina Castor's probably doing that. Dina Castor, who, you know, is an Olympic medalist in the marathon and has a kid, but she's a great woman, but she's not us, you know?
Well, Sarah said she runs in the morning first thing most days. Do you do the same thing?
You know, usually. And really, sometimes if I'm if I've really procrastinated, if you can use that word when you're lying in bed in the morning, I didn't want to get up. Sometimes at lunchtime, I'll give it a go and run. You know, I work from home, so I can run at lunch, take my break that way. But it really, you know, so much stuff can interfere with your run during the day. And so we find if you don't get up and get it done, you're just always kind of playing like move the chess pieces. How am I going to fit it in? And what if something comes up? And what if my kid gets sick or I have to take to soccer practice or whatever? But we do have moms, you know, that fit it in. Like there was a great picture on our website once. This woman brought a playpen to the track.
Yeah.
She had like a 2-year-old and a 1-year-old, I think, and stuck them in there, and she did her her laps on the track. I mean, there's a lot of ways to fit it in if you're not a morning person.
Yeah. I should point out that Dimity McDowell and Sarah Bowen-Shea will speak this evening at 6:30 at Unity Temple on the Plaza. That's 707 West 47th Street as part of KC Express's 30th birthday. Tickets are $10. Visit kcexpress.com or kcur.org for more information. And if you, by chance, are a mother and a runner, how do you balance the two? Give us a phone call and tell us. 816-235-2121. 2888. Our email address is up-to-date at kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. So I'm guessing, I know everyone's schedule and everyone's lives are different, but the morning, Sarah, sounds like a pretty golden time for very busy women, and I guess men for that matter, to carve time out to do what they got to do.
It is, because there's always going to be, as Dimity alluded to, there's always going to be other demands on your time. Your boss is going to come in and ask that you stay late to work on a project. Your kid's going to be sick. There's doctor's appointments to go to, whatever. And so I don't like setting my alarm super early, but I that's the time everybody's asleep in the house. No one notices I'm gone. For a lot of women, that's a big deal. Like, some women's husbands don't like them to take time out to go running. Some people can't listen to their kids crying when they head out the door. Dimity and I are a little immune to that. And so
we built it up over time.
Yeah. So
it's calluses, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. In our ears. And so it's just, get up, get it done. And it just sets me, and I think Dimity would agree, sets us up for such a great day. I mean, it gives you such a sense of accomplishment and pride.
Now, it's interesting, just being around the two of you for a little bit, you both have such great energy. And it's funny, there is this counterintuitive idea about running. And Dimity, tell us about this idea that you go out and you burn up a lot of energy, but that restores a whole bunch coming back the other way, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the endorphin rush, is kind of legendary, that runner's high that you look for. And I don't get it every time. But it does. It just kind of elevates you. It just brings you up to this level of floating. Sounds like a little – well, actually, I write and train like a mother. It makes me feel like a rock star. Mm-hmm. It really does. I imagine that is what it feels like when you're on stage and everyone's screaming your name, and you just feel so great and you're just fulfilled and feel so good. And it just – so you've got this kind of great physical feeling, and it's also getting up in the morning. It's kind of like something you tuck away in your pocket. Look what I did. It's 6:45 and I've already run 5 miles, and now I'm home and my kids are waking up and I'm going to make them lunch. And it just gives you this very can-do attitude for the day.
Sarah, there are folks out there listening right now to the two of you talking who are thinking, this all sounds good, but I work my tail off around the house and I ain't getting up at 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning to go out for a run because I'm pooped and I need my sleep. And you say what to that?
That it really – energy begets energy. Mm-hmm. And that it takes some getting used to go to bed a little earlier. I mean, Dimity goes to bed at 9 o'clock at night. I mean, I'm sure her husband –
or earlier.
Yeah.
who's counting, right? Yeah.
I'm sure her husband might like her to stay up a little later. But, those are the choices we make. And I mean, we also have women on our Facebook page. We have more than 15,000 fans on our Facebook page. And we hear every scenario there is. I mean, women who work swing shifts, women who work night jobs, everything. And they just – when you realize the benefits that running can bring to you, you realize that outweighs the nice feeling of sleeping in a little bit later.
So do you run every day?
I do not. I used to for a while. I had a little streak going of about 5.5 years. That was a little
every day.
I exercised every day. Yeah, that was a little unhealthy.
So sometimes – is it unhealthy?
It is. I mean, your body needs a rest. Your body can only get stronger if you give it a rest. And so you build it, you break it down, and then it builds back up during rest. Mm-hmm. And so now, and then 2 years ago, I did 2 marathons in the same year, and I was running 6 days a week, and I was loving it, but I ran into an injury last year. So now I run 4 days a week. I do boot camp twice a week, and I take –
And boot camp is what?
Boot camp is an hour of about 12 people being led by a leader doing, planks, push-ups, step-ups.
It's not running. It's doing other parts of your body.
Exactly. It's strength training with a little cardio thrown in, and then I take Mondays off.
Yeah, Dimity, do you go every day?
Oh, no, no. So I have a pretty injury-prone body, and I think 3 to 4 days is kind of my sweet spot. And so, Sarah was talking about, cross-training is good. I ride my bike a lot. I strength train a lot. Strength training is kind of the secret weapon of runners. If you can get yourself stronger, you can go faster and farther with not as much effort. I just want to go back to one thing about the people who say I can't do it. I think too, going back to the connotation of running, it doesn't mean that you're going all out really fast, really far. I mean, they can get up and start with a run walk program where you're literally running for a minute and walking for a minute.
Yeah.
And it's not as hard as, I've got to go out and cover X amount of miles. I mean, I think people kind of put up these hurdles instead of trying it.
Well, there is a sense that, in this country, running
it has gotten a little complicated. I mean, it doesn't seem – you have to do certain things, and if you don't know what those certain things are, it's a reason to sort of avoid it, right? I mean, you don't go there, Sarah.
Sure, yeah. I mean, that you know, magazines that we both are contributing editors for Runner's World, you know, we make our living writing workouts, and so that fills the pages.
Those magazines are full of all kinds of stuff.
Right, exactly. You can dice the pieces pretty – you can cut the pie up pretty small. But, you know, there is nothing wrong with going out there and doing 2-3 miles and just going one pace and enjoying it and just setting yourself up.
Yeah.
So,
well, again, if you're a mother who's also a runner, call us and tell us how you make those two worlds work in your lives. 816-235-2888, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. Well, what's new in the whole world of footwear? We were talking a little bit before the show about these new runner's flats that seem so popular right now. Are you guys using those things or not?
We both Sarah's coming off an injury and I'm pretty injury prone as well. So we haven't really adopted them into our running. I think that there's a place for them. But I think like anything, you've really got to phase it in super slowly. Like, so people are really into barefoot running because of Born to Run. And that's fine. But, you know, so the first time you do it, if you say you run 5 miles, regularly. So at the end of your 5 mile run, find a grassy spot, take off your shoes and run for 5 minutes max without your shoes on. And just mm-hmm. learning how to – I mean, the beauty of barefoot running is that you really get different senses in your feet that you don't get when you're wearing shoes. You figure out where it's most comfortable to land, where your body distributes its weight nicely. It's just a different perspective. So that's very useful. Personally, for me, I see people running barefoot on the concrete sidewalks, and I'm like, that doesn't really – fit with my idea of
like
evolution.
Like you stub your toe.
Well, you can stub your toe, and you know, I mean, you know, going back to like the Neanderthal argument that people use, you know, that they didn't have shoes back then, but they weren't running on concrete and bike paths and that kind of thing. So.
I wear minimalist shoes during boot camp. I mean, the whole minimalism, the idea of taking out some cushioning, bringing you closer to the ground. I mean, that's pervading all different types of athletic footwear. And so I wear minimalist shoes when I do boot camp. And so I have found it, the theory is that it helps strengthen the muscles in your feet. And I have found that my feet are stronger. They feel better. I got over my plantar fasciitis a little quicker. But I'm just not willing to take that step outdoors. I think part of my injury came from wearing too flexible shoes while I was racing and doing track workouts.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Mary Catherine from Kansas City, Missouri. You're on with Dimity McDowell and Sarah Bowen-Shea. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been doing a lot of nodding, listening to all of their comments and insights. And one point that I wanted to pass along that I think is also a great benefit to working it in daily is just the example that you're giving your kids as far as the importance of exercise and giving mom that time to do what she needs to do. And there have been days where maybe I've gotten up before the kids are up and done my run, and I come home and by afternoon they're looking at me and they'll say, "Didn't you do your run?" And so I feel like I've got this gallery of people that are making sure that I'm keeping with my goals too. But I just want to thank them for all of their commentary, and I'm certainly looking forward to reading their words as well.
Hey, Mary Catherine, what time of day do you run?
It just depends on the day. I have a 4-year-old and a now 6-year-old, and there are some days where I take them to the park where I can run in a way where I can keep an eye on them and vice versa, or put on a show for them and run down to the treadmill or go to the Y and let them go and play in the kid area while I get that mile in. I'm not a distance runner like these women are, but it's just that daily endorphin hit and need that I have.
Good phone call, Mary Catherine. Thanks for making it.
Well, thank you very much for the guest. I appreciate it.
You bet. Bye-bye. And Sarah, you know, moms with young kids, how do you juggle that if you can't go first thing in the morning when everyone's still asleep? You know, Mary Catherine just mentioned a couple of ideas, but how did you manage it?
Sure. Well, the jogging strollers, what do we say, Dimity, and train like a mother. We think it's the second greatest invention after the sports bra.
You're huge on them.
Yeah. So sports bra, jogging stroller, and treadmill are mother runners' best friends. And so, I mean, and, you know, I had a double stroller for taking the twins out while
those things aren't cheap, though, are they?
They're not. But, you know, Craigslist, you know, if you live in an area that has Craigslist, you know, you can get one used pretty well.
Or you can also find them at, recycled kids stores, like clothing stores, you know, or that kind of thing. Secondhand, it's pretty easy to find.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you recommend all that.
Yes, certainly. And, you know, and there's the, you know, you could also wait until your spouse gets home from work and, you know, he or she might want to spend some time with the kids. So you, you know, take a break and head out the door. I mean, we meet mom runners. We met some women in Annapolis. We go to a bunch of race expos and we met some women who went running at 10 o'clock at night. So, you know, there's just.
That's when I go. Yeah.
Yeah. So you just have to kind of, you know, just take a step back, look at your life and see where you can fit it in.
Another idea, just to toss it out there, is trading with a friend. If you have mother runners, you know, you are friends with somebody, you watch their kids, I'm going to go for a run, vice versa.
Yeah,
you gotta knock it out in 2 hours.
Cecilia from Leavenworth, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I just wanted to share that I'm not a mother yet, but we're looking to head that way in the next year or so, and I do what you do, and I get up early, and I make that the first part of my day, and the hope is that when we are ready to have a family, and I do have little ones running around, I'll know I can do it because I've been doing it for so long. And through graduate school, planning a wedding, sick parents, all of that stuff, I've been able to maintain my morning running routine.
Wow.
And because of my morning running routine, I feel like I'm better able to tackle all of those obstacles. So I know, hopefully, you know, young mommy will remember that I can do it because I've already been doing it for so long.
Oh, good for you, Cecilia. Very inspirational call. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. If you're pregnant, do you run?
It really is an individual thing. It feels comfortable and your doctor's giving you the okay, then absolutely go at a pace that feels good. And we've got women that run up to the day of delivery that we've had contact with. I ran till about 8 weeks with both pregnancy, and I was like, I'm not liking this. It isn't enjoyable. My body hurts. So I stayed active. I hiked and I biked and I, you know, walked. But the reality is whether or not you run during pregnancy or not, you're still going to have a little bit of a road back after you give birth. So so mentally setting yourself up for that, just knowing that you might not hit the speeds that you want to right away, or you're going to be tired from lack of sleep, all that kind of stuff, like you just have to kind of be prepared for that.
Is there any reason that the baby's in any danger if you go out and run 5 miles?
Nope. The American College of
Obstetrics and Gynecologists.
Okay Running, their guideline is that if you can talk during your aerobic exercise, you're fine. There's no issue. Obviously, it's something to discuss with your doctor if you're concerned about it. But we've had plenty of women that have run through pregnancy with no issues at all.
Yeah. Sir, go ahead.
I was going to say that we, on our podcast, 2 podcasts ago, we had an obstetrician on there, and she was saying, we were saying, well, what's the deal here? ACOG says it's okay to run while you're pregnant. Why is it that we hear from so many women who say that their doctors say, no, don't go running? She said they just take it so personally, and they just, if one thing goes wrong, then they're cautious for the rest of their patients. But she was saying, you know, just listen, that a woman's body is an amazing thing, and listen to what it's trying to tell you.
And if you've just had a baby, how quickly can you start off running again?
It depends upon whether you've had a C-section or a natural delivery, but usually about 6 weeks or so. But again, like I just said, you got to start slowly. I mean, when I went back out after being pregnant, I thought I was fit, and like a 10-minute run felt like a marathon. You know, it was like, this used to be my warm up, and now I'm done. That was it. You know, so it comes back, it snaps back a little quicker, but yeah, you just have to be patient and kind of and set up little goals for yourself along the way.
A lot of folks like myself always look at, you know, folks who run marathons. And Sarah, you mentioned, do you both do marathons?
I've done 2. I probably won't do another.
Well, I just get down on my knees thinking, I don't know how the human body manages to run a marathon. I can't ever see doing that. So I'm just wondering, when you become a runner, how do you know how far to push it? You know, 5K, 10K, half marathon. How do you know what you're doing?
We're big believers in building up gradually and slowly. I mean, sometimes enthusiasm gets the best of you and you know, your friends are doing a half marathon and you think, yeah, great. Okay, I'm going to do that too. And it's just amazing what you can accomplish by setting up small incremental goals and increasing your mileage by about 10% a week. So if you run, you know, 5 miles this week, you know, run 5.5 next week and just go from there. And I mean, you know, so when you think, well, I have to run 26.2 miles. Well, I'm not asking you to do that today, Steve, you know, that you're going to set up a 18-20 week plan and you're going to incrementally build that up. And, you know, again, the human body is an amazing thing. And so, you know, and we have to do proper fueling, proper hydrating, you know, get more sleep, all those good things.
Well, Dimity McDowell and Sarah Bowen Shea will speak this evening at 6:30 at Unity Temple on the Plaza. More information about that on our website, kcur.org. Yeah, I sure enjoyed having you both here.
Thanks for having
us. Thanks for coming
in. Thanks, Steve.
Again, their new book is Train Like a Mother. It's the sequel to their first book, Run Like a Mother. Coming up, we'll talk about conventions in Kansas City. I'm Steve Kraske with the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's conversation about support for those who care for people with chronic illnesses or travel writer Rick Steves' discussion about travel as a political act, you'll find them at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, one Native American study of life on reservations, tribal sovereignty, treaty rights, and natural resource conservation, as well as Brian McTavish with our weekend to-do list. Well, how's Kansas City doing when it comes to attracting conventions to town? Today we'll get an update and we'll talk about just how big a deal a new downtown convention hotel would be for Kansas City. We'll also get an update on preparations for the Major League Baseball All-Star Game this summer, which will be staged right here in Kansas City. With us today is Rick Hughes. He's president and CEO of the Kansas City Convention and Visitors Association. Rick, nice to see you again.
Nice to be back. Welcome. Steve. Good to see you.
Well, just yesterday, you all launched a new branding campaign. What's that all about, Rick?
Well, we've been at this for about 18 months. I think that I don't have to go through all the incredible developments that have happened not only in downtown Kansas City but across the region over the last 10 years. You know, we found ourselves in some of our marketing material back 5-7 years ago having to deal with these mock-ups and, you know, the planning thing and drawings over here. And now we have, you know, all this incredible stuff in the ground. So we believe that it's time to really rev up our image and our brand to say, let's now look at what we've become. And it really deserves a makeover on the branding side.
And describe the new brand for us.
Well, we set out to do two things. Those of us that live here and our residents really have that heartfelt piece of Kansas City, the barbecue, the Midwestern hospitality, the center of the United States, friendly, authentic. Those are all things that resonate well with us and with our customer groups that we have out there. And there's five that we looked at. But what we discovered as we did a little more positioning research, is that the other piece of that that perhaps we see here but don't really accumulate an opinion as quickly as our customer groups, these are visitors, is, you know, the hip, cool, contemporary, urban arts aspect of it. So we wanted to recreate a new branding platform and, of course, the little indicia that you have that really embraces both of those things. So you've got the Midwestern, hospitable, friendly, authentic over here on one hand, coming together with the hip, urban, contemporary on the other.
It's hard to do in one logo, right?
It's a bit of a yes, it is. It's a little bit of a little bit of a challenge, but we think we hit it off because we went back to those groups and they said, yeah, that's it. That's what expresses all of that.
Well, just last October, big headline in the Kansas City Star, and the headline was Kansas City convention business is falling way off. And the story began this way, Rick: a sharp plunge in convention bookings this year and gloomy prospects for the future are setting off alarm bells at the Kansas City Convention and Visitors Association. Convention rooms were down 30% compared with last year and 50% off projections. Discussions are stalled on a new 1,000-room convention hotel, and the big three existing downtown convention hotels need sprucing up. So give us an update here, Rick. Is there anything new to the picture today?
Well, you know, a lot of that was just a little bit of hyperbole. The 30% off or the 50% off at the time was the way we pace ourselves on bookings. As it turned out, you know, we cleaned up the year in November and December and came back. We're still, you know, about 78% of where we wanted to be. I think the more important thing is not just what we were booking last year for future years, which is where that reference point was, but how are we really accumulating bookings in the next 7 to 9 years that we measure out there, of where we need to be in those years now to be able to hit the mark that we have. And, we're right at 98% of our booking pace. It's not where we want to be. We'd like to be above that. But I think that was just a little gloomier statement. It didn't come from me.
So you guys actually book out that many years?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We have business on the books now well into 2018.
Mm-hmm. So what was the issue? I mean, it was maybe a temporary jag in the numbers, but what was causing that, Rick? What's happening?
And this has
there?
Been a little chronic, and we believe there are solutions for this. We don't have an attraction problem. There are people that just absolutely want to have Kansas City on the list.
I was going to say, yeah.
And all the new stuff, it is not an attraction problem. What happens is that when we get a lot of major planners in here, we have a little bit of a closing issue. And some of that really stems around some of the logistical issues that we've been through before of, having to bus from certain areas. Once you, get into that kind of transportation, you have greater liability. You've got another contract that you have to deal with. You've got to worry about people getting on and off.
So you're saying people can't simply walk to where they want to go in many cases. Am I hearing that right?
That's right. And so we think we've just, we just slipped. We should have booked more. We should have closed more in the sales vernacular than what we actually did. But
And so we have a new downtown entertainment district. We have the Kauffman Center, obviously brand new, lots of new stuff. So we need what? We need a downtown convention hotel. We need mass transit. What's the issue?
Well, we've been advocating for the 1,000-room convention hotel. And if it happens, that'll be great. We believe that it'll really stabilize this big convention market, a market that Kansas City has enjoyed for nearly 60 years now, since really the advent of conventions.
Right. And
I know a lot of people say, well, wait a minute. We got $9 million of cool new stuff in this community. Now what are you going to ask for? And the answer is that it's all of the above, to the points that you mentioned, the entertainment component, the convention center that's updated and the new ballroom and the high-tech aspects that you need in that. But then that third leg is a real important one. It's where people lay their head down for 9 hours a night. And most of the people that are in those rooms today, 57% of them, are women. So it's not only do they have all the creature comforts inside of that hotel, but is it convenient? And convenient means, can I walk there within a couple of blocks? And when it's not convenient to walk there within a couple of blocks or to have, connections that easily work, then it becomes other things like safety. And so there is a little bit of that there. We clearly know, not this isn't Rick Hughes' opinion that we ought to just have, this new box just to be like everyone else. This is what planners tell us over and over again.
And what are the prospects for that new box?
Well,
obviously, Mayor Sly James very out front saying we need to have a downtown convention hotel. It's controversial because of the cost to the city. Where are we right now, Rick?
Well, and Mayor James and many of the council people have been pretty keen on the project. They've seen firsthand some of these responses from customers that we've had that have fallen off, and it's big numbers. It's millions and millions of dollars a year that we lose. Unfortunately, when you're dealing with a core product like that, it has to be core because it has to be convenient and have all those bells and whistles that we mentioned. Then you've got, things like other buildings, and you've got urban core, and you've got a lot of cost issues. So it does not pass muster by most developers to say, we'll come in and flop $400 million on that. So it does require some subsidy. But I think what people don't understand is I don't believe the city should be obligated to a long-term ownership position in this hotel. They ought to just help us get it up off the ground as it stabilizes in year 4 or 5. It gets a good run as you're looking at 8 or 9 years down the road. They ought to sell it and recoup their money and get out of the business. The city does not need to be in the hotel business, the convention hotel business, any more than it needs to be in the international airport business or in the sports complex business or in the convention center business or convention hall or entertainment for that matter.
So what is the upfront cost to the city right now, Rick? What's your best guess?
Well, this project, and if done right, and it has to be done right, it can't be engineered down. We have examples of what happens when it's not done right across the state. Is probably closing in just south of $400 million is what the cost would be.
It's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. Absolutely
it's
is.
It's a lot of money at a time when the mayor's talking about $1 billion for infrastructure. There's other needs being kicked around town, a mass transit, a streetcar system. It's competing with a lot of stuff right now.
I'll be the first to admit that.
Yeah. So how optimistic are you actually get it sometime in the next few years?
Well, I believe because of some of those other commitments and issues that we have to deal with. This, I don't know if you mentioned the sewer system is huge.
Well, yeah.
That's in the billion-dollar range.
Let's try not to forget it.
That's been kicked down the road for some time, and the further you get into that, the more onerous the solution becomes. So, I think we're pretty pragmatic. You know, we're not going to do this. That is the hotel, and then let some of the other things go—the neighborhoods and the sewer system and that. So I think it'll find its place in time. I think it's probably in most people's minds not a question of if, but a question of when.
But your point is, the city dumps in $400 million. Do you think we can recoup much of that 4 or 5 years later?
Absolutely do. Mm-hmm. Absolutely do.
So the risk then in your mind isn't all that great.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. You know, one of the issues that we deal with now that we really weren't talking about 5 or 6 years ago is that we've had this economy that's taken a little bit of a hiccup. So doing any of these things probably has a little bit more risk to it today.
Rick Hughes is our guest. He's president and CEO of the Kansas City Convention and Visitors Association. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. You know, at the time that story came out, I think my buddy Kevin Collison wrote it about some concerns about the future of the convention industry in Kansas City. Some said at the time that Kansas City should now play for smaller stakes, Rick, and stop competing with places like Indianapolis. And maybe they said we're more in line with Omaha and Oklahoma City. What's your view of that?
Well, that's a pretty easy off the cuff. What happens is, and we are drilling down a little bit to the smaller meetings, what happens when you give up the larger destinations such as an Indianapolis or competing with a Chicago or a Denver, Colorado, is that the business that we're competing that would be smaller, that would fit in Omaha, would also fit in Oklahoma City. It would also fit in Topeka, perhaps. So, you know, it's not like you're losing your competition there. You just have more smaller cities that are vying for the same group. So, you know, we believe that we can compete and we can do a lot better with some of the smaller meetings that don't require that transportation requirement that we have. And we believe that we can also fix that with some Band-Aids as well.
You know, when it comes, Rick, to cities our side, I'm thinking of Denver, Indianapolis, St. Louis. Are we keeping up with them when it comes to the convention business, or are lots of cities off a little bit right now?
Well, there are many cities that are off through the economy. Things have slowed down. The pace of the decision processes have changed dramatically through this economy. The good news in all of this is that meetings are still an extremely viable form of communication. So, you know, there's a lot of people out there that say, wait a minute, you got all this technology that's there. Why do I need to go through all that expense to send people
there? I was going to ask you that. Yeah.
And the truth is that I could be on the phone right now with you sitting in my office, but it's probably better that we're looking eye to eye here.
Absolutely.
And the same thing is true with meetings, is that there's still going to be a huge, huge demand for meetings and people getting together, especially because of some of the non-touch things, if you will, that are associated with technology. They're here to stay. And to answer your original questions, no, we're not competing well with the Denvers and the Indianapolis. They've passed us. We were way ahead of them back in the 40s and 50s before they had their infrastructure in place, but they have since surpassed us. But we can still be successful.
They passed us why, Rick?
Well, I for some of the reasons that we mentioned, there was a real commitment. You know, I spent 11 years in Indianapolis. I also lived in Denver and worked in the business, so I've seen this firsthand. There's been a real commitment to bring balance and development to the three-legged stool that I mentioned. It's not just about the entertainment. That's a given these days. If you looked at downtown Indianapolis, when I was recruited there back in 92, there was like two restaurants. And today there's probably a 96 or just short of 100 inside of this three or four block area. Look at Denver, Colorado, what they've done with 16th Street. So that entertainment is there. The convention facilities have both been expanded three or four times and are new over the last 10 years. Plus, they all have these big 1,000-room hotels that meet the demands of meeting planners for this convention product.
And we asked this question on KCUR's Facebook page. What must Kansas City do to attract more visitors, less rights, bring back and amp up music festivals like Sprint Fest and Jazz and Blues Festival? How does the Kansas City International Jazz, Blues, and Barbecue Festival sound?
Well, you know, Rhythm and Ribs is in place, and I think it's showing some good upward trending. I was on the front end of that. I can remember heading out of town one day, and I had the jazz station on, and coming back in town, it was country western, and I don't have a problem with either of those genres, but that was sort of the last peg, if you will, for jazz and blues in this community. So we put together Rhythm and Ribs about 7 years ago, and I think it's still trajecting up, and they're planning big things this year, and that's precisely what we need to have that really speaks to the heritage of Kansas City
I'm
music.
I'm a big fan of that, that's for sure. Lori writes, crime is an issue. People aren't going to visit a city when they have a higher than average chance of becoming a victim. Do you buy that?
Nope, really don't. It doesn't show up a lot. Of course, you know, people aren't going to call in and say, wow, I looked at your crime statistics and I was going to come in and decided not to. It really does not show up on the radar. It's more of a local issue than people reading about it in the Omahas or Minneapolis or Oklahoma City or, you know, northern Texas.
So how many conventions a year are we getting right now, Rick?
Well, last year, you know, we ran through with 17. It was a soft year for us in terms of conventions. And you have, you know, the up and down year. We have about 22 this year, optimally, under our existing product portfolio, we should probably have somewhere in the neighborhood of 25, 26 good solid annuals every year.
Mm-hmm. And I know, what are some of the big ones we're having this year and maybe next year as well?
Well, you know, Skills USA is still...
That's always a big one.
It's there in the top of the list and it'll be with us through 2015. We secured a really nice piece of business, the Educational Testing Services. These are the people that do all the college grading.
They come and grade them right here in
right
town,
here,
right?
And Bartle Hall. Can you imagine that? It's like 8 to 5 and they're over there and they're here for... exactly 2 weeks. They have to have the information back by the 15th of June. Volleyball's in here. Our good friends at Cerner Corporation have been so good to keep their conference here in town. We just got out of the National College Coaches Association, soccer coaches, excuse me. It's the largest gathering of soccer coaches. That happened back in January, which is a great spot for it. So those are some examples of the variety that we have.
And I saw that you have a group like La Raza, a major Latino organization, coming here in 2015, right?
Yeah, that's not settled yet. They're still considering that on the La Raza part of it, but we're happy to see them come back and reconsider us.
How does the Kansas City Convention and Visitors Association, Rick, sell Kansas City to potential conventioneers or really to anyone looking at Kansas City? What's the process you guys use?
Well, you know, our acquisition process is probably not much different than it is in people selling widgets or people selling Kansas City as a place to relocate a business. It all starts, it really happens in basically three boxes. And the first box is, which is the way you do business, and whether you're selling telephones or whatever, that first box is, what is that awareness and what are people seeing out in the hinterland and discovering about Kansas City that they like? And as they begin considering those options, whether it's for a vacation that they may be looking at or perhaps a meeting or a larger convention, they'll start looking at us vis-a-vis the competitive set and say, you know, how does Kansas City stack up? So our media relation team, our advertising, some of our sales promotions that we do all fit in that box and really help promote that positive energy and imagery about Kansas City. And then that flows into the second box, the second of three. And that is, once they say, there's some things I like about that, how do we trip them into the potential of being a customer? And that's where we have the more personal engagement. We've got 9 people that actually sell our community, or we've got phone banks, or we've got the web that comes in that they'll consider to in that second box, which then converts them into a customer. And then the third piece, of course, is just delivering on everything that we've promised in the first two boxes. And, you know, I think we do that extremely well here in Kansas City to have them loop back around again.
What's it going to take to get La Raza in here for sure? Where are we with that whole thing?
Well, we had a little bit of a challenge. We had another group that had the first option on the dates that they have. So I think those have been freed up right now, and that's being considered by the La Raza board. And I am pretty confident. I think we probably got another couple of months before they meet and really talk about that particular year. But I'm really confident that you'll see them back here.
I saw that you were involved in, you know, the Federal Aviation Administration is considering relocating a management training center to Kansas City to the old Lyric Opera downtown. Where does that whole thing stand?
You know, I have not heard an update on that in a couple of months. I know that it was being, I don't think I'm talking out of school here, it was being fast-tracked through the TIF Commission.
Right.
A huge opportunity.
Absolutely.
And they were very, very keen on Kansas City, and I think it's, you know, it's a real credit to the community here and everybody that worked on that, because there's a lot of places that that group could go. And I think there's a real strong option. Hopefully that's a great reuse of the Lyric Opera, and it would just be a tremendous customer. A couple hundred people a day would be in here throughout the year.
Well, one thing you are working on is the baseball All-Star game coming to Kansas City in July. We going to be ready for that, Rick?
Absolutely, we will.
Yeah, it's a big one, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And, you know, it's one of those really kind of once-in-a-lifetime opportunities. So.
Tell us about what's going on there, all the moving parts. How are you gearing up for an event that is that huge for a town like
yes,
this?
Yes, you know, it's massive. And I'm not planning to attend the game. The ticket is such either price or not available, to give you some idea of how that works. And I think I'm kind of in the same.
Can I get a ticket?
Yeah, we'll work on that.
My son's been bugging me for like months to get a ticket.
We'll give Kevin Ulick a call today.
Yeah, okay.
Should I give him
the least you can
800 number there?
Yeah.
But there are a lot of things that are going on outside of the actual game on Tuesday, July 10th itself. And one of the big features that Major League Baseball rolled out a number of years ago is the Fan Fest.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a baseball addict, you're going to love the Fan Fest because it's all about baseball. And we're anticipating maybe 100 to 125,000 people in total. We'll trek through Bartle Hall, where it's hosted, over the days leading up and just after the All-Star game itself. So that's one big activity. Now, what I just described are two major pieces of geography, too. You've got 8 miles out east to the Truman Sports Complex, and then you got all this happening downtown. So it's going to be a little bit of a movement, but, you know, with our roads and our systems and our transportation experts that we have here in Kansas City, I'm confident that we'll have all that figured out.
And there's some stuff going on the plaza, too, right? If folks want to see the ball players, I guess they can get up close and personal for a little bit.
That's right, Steve. The more intimate atmosphere for getting close to the players is going to be on that red carpet.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to happen on that Tuesday morning of the game. They'll all come out in their Chevy trucks, and they'll do a little mile and a half loop through the plaza there, and you'll really get to see them up front and close. And it'll be I know Kansas City will really turn out great for
them. Well, and just to clarify, when I was asking about tickets for the game, I really wasn't asking so much about myself as much as I was, can the average Kansas Cityan buy a ticket for the All-Star game or the Home Run Derby or anything else, or are those tickets already spoken for?
I'm not. Many of them are spoken for. Some with the season ticket holders are there, and then there's great allotments. So I don't know how all that magic works. I did hear, I think it's left field for the Home Run Derby, which I would have high interest in, is running about $1,000 a seat now.
That's
so.
Why I don't have a ticket yet.
We're working on that.
Well, when it comes to an event like that, Rick, I mean, how long has the planning been for the baseball All-Star game? I assume you guys have been working on this going back quite some time.
Well, you know, we worked pretty closely, hand in hand, really, with the Kansas City Royals and with other partners, the Kansas City Sports Commission and others that we have, downtown council. But the bidding was a fairly extended process. All of our focus now is on really, you know, that third box I was talking about
right.
is really pulling the thing off. And so there's a lot of people that are planning that.
And the bidding began when? How far back do you have to go?
This was 4 years ago that
wow.
we were talking about. And that's really, really relatively short term on an event of that size. I think the good news in this type of event is that Major League Baseball has, you know, knows what they're doing. This is their event. It's not turnkey. I can't use that, but they know precisely what they want, where they want it, when they want it, and so it makes our planning a little bit easier because they're so good at what they do.
And again, how many visitors do you expect to have in this town as a result of that?
Well, we think we're going to have a fairly close sellout of all the hotels. So, you know, let's grab at least 60,000 visitors there. If we get two to a room, that might be a little bit high.
Mm-hmm.
There will be a lot of day trippers that will come in for some of the activities and then take a hike back to Wichita or whatever. You know, that 125,000 number is a good one for FanFest.
Well, the Royals are on top of things today, Rick. We just received this email from the Royals. Fans will be able to purchase tickets for the Major League Baseball All-Star Fan Fest and to Taco Bell's All-Star Sunday beginning Saturday, March 3rd at 10 a.m. So there you go. One other question we had from a listener here. How important is a visitor's experience at an airport to return visits and return convention business?
Well, you know, it all fits into the puzzle. It's one of those, the airport and the interchange and the exchange there is one of those things that we refer to as the moments of truth in travel. So, you know, we have a very, from a consumer perspective, extremely friendly airport. So ours has always been good. It's an important factor. I think the connections are probably a bigger part.
We have a new terminal coming, though.
That is in the planning stages, discussion stages, certainly, yes.
That could make a difference?
It could make a difference, probably on the operation of the airport more than the experience even.
Well, Rick, it's good to have you here. Thanks for taking
Always
some
pleasure,
time.
Always a pleasure, Steve. Thank you.
That's Rick Hughes. He's president and CEO of the Kansas City Convention and Visitors Association. You'll find guest bios, archives, and podcasts of our program at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR up to date. Tomorrow on the program, the history and life of Indian reservations, plus Brian McTavish returns with the weekend to-do list. Our music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help today from KCUR's Kathleen Pointer, Danny Alexander, Maria Carter, and Kim Noble. The show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.